For today, what I thought we'd do is we'd listen to Mr. Armstrong, who gave a sermon in 1981, specifically on getting back on the track. He mentions makeup within it, and he certainly mentions it quite strongly. But it is all to do with getting back on the track. And I think at this stage in our existence, it certainly is something that we need to listen to and listen to very carefully. Before going into that, what I thought I would do, rather than go through the normal news items as I would normally do, I thought I might just give a bit of a history of the actual events that led up to this particular sermon. I think a lot of times we forget just what in fact happened back in the 70s and 80s and what led up to a particular sermon that was given. And you can understand, once you start really thinking about what this man had gone through, that you start to understand a bit more about what he was saying. I remember sitting in the Principles of Living class with Mr. Armstrong when I was a freshman back in 1967. And, you know, I just listened to him talking about his wife and so on. And never even occurred to me that his wife died, I believe it was actually that year, in 1967, earlier on that year. I remember it was summertime. So here was this man who was desperately missing his wife, giving a Principles of Living class, and it was, you know, later on that year. So we tend to, as a teenager, I just didn't understand it at all. Now, I obviously can appreciate a great deal more just what he was going through in actually giving that class. But if we go back and have a look at the things that were going on prior to this particular tape being made, I think also it'll give us all a bit more insight into the words that he has for us. And in particular, the younger people that were not around, at least were not adults at that time, I think also it would help you to listen and hear what in fact he has to say. Just to really give a bit of background to what he is saying. And to do that, I think we need to go really back into the 60s. I don't think we any need to go further back than that. But the 60s saw some phenomenal growth within the church. Certainly, 1975 appeared, in the early 60s, to be the date. There are a number of prophecies that seem to culminate at 1975. And yet Mr. Armstrong wouldn't set dates. But also people outside were setting dates. They're saying in 1975 there would be this utopian world in existence. And therefore 1975 in prophecy was written. And it certainly appeared a significant year. And from 1975, 72 therefore would be the year that the church would flee. And the 60s saw an enormous rate of growth. The radio stations over here, the pirate stations, were certainly broadcasting, was it 370, was it? Caroline and all these other ones, anyway. But at the end of the 60s, Mr. Armstrong Sr. Could see that God had actually held up events, and he certainly was telling everybody that. And yet an awful lot of people went on believing that, you know, having worked out all these dates and everything else, they kept on believing that and didn't actually believe what he had to say. I graduated in 71, Judy graduated in 72, and in 72 my brother Andrew also went to Brickett Wood, and he continued there until 74 and went across to the States. I think he was in Big Sandy, he was over there anyway, when they decided to close Brickett Wood. And he then applied to Pasadena and spent the last 2 years of his college career in Pasadena. Now, those 2 years, from 74 to 76, I remember writing to him saying, you know, you remember what you learned in Brickett Wood, because Brickett Wood was always regarded as a very hard or harsh environment. You know, there were dating rules which were enforced and so on. But it's interesting, I was talking to Fene Ellis, who I was just mentioning, who was over in Belgium, or Nee Carrion before, and she was saying that she was around that time, just before the college finally was closed down by Mr. Armstrong Sr. when he started putting the church back on track. And in her dorm alone, there were two girls pregnant at the end of their time. So these kinds of things were going on, And I know my letter to Andrew got short shrift. He said I was being disloyal and all the rest of it. But I could see to some degree what in fact was happening at that time in the 70s. And I could see that it wasn't in keeping with God's way, even though I was, you know, not a minister or anything involved in the ministry at that time. But it wasn't until August 1977, Mr. Armstrong, remember, was going around the world, and in August 77 he had this major heart attack over at Tucson, where he had a house. And it was interesting, really, that it was that really brought so much to the surface. People at that time, and I remember I was among them, thought that, well, he's on his last legs, you know, he's in way into his 80s. I mean, he's not going to last much longer. Mr. Ted Armstrong is going to be the one. We just didn't know what was actually going to happen. And we were quite, at least I know, I was quite cynical at that particular time. But this heart failure actually helped Mr. Armstrong Sr. to see what the church would be like after his death. So what you're going to listen to is something that Mr. Armstrong had to say to the church after his death. Because really that's what happened in 77. He technically died of a heart attack. People had dismissed the fact that he was ever going to recover again. And he was able to see the liberal elements rise within the church. And he determined then that he himself needed to get back on track, and also he had been given a responsibility by God to get the church back on track. Now, he saw the primary problem when he finally came back around 78. He saw one of the primary problems was the leadership of the church under him, and principally Mr. Ted Armstrong. And he wrote to Mr. Ted Armstrong, I'll just quote some of this. It says, "The work he started through me," he's talking about God, "he started from literally nothing. I had to hitchhike to get to a place to preach. The broadcast was started literally on faith. There was diabolical opposition and persecution, but it was Christ doing the work, using me as his instrument. The work grew at the steady rate of approximately 30% a year for 35 years, and I'd never heard of any organization, institution, or business that matched that record. No, not only did it grow, it was done in a manner unlike anything in the world. It was Christ doing it his way, and not the way that men would do it." And this is very important. And he then goes on to his son. He says, "In due time, you, my son, came into the work. But unfortunately, you did not agree with the way that Christ had been leading me. You came to a good knowledge of the Bible, of God's truth, doctrinally. God gave you exceptional talents for broadcasting and telecasting. At first, you followed the same style as the air that Christ had used in me, totally different from the way the expert commercial broadcasters used. People could not tell whether it was you or I speaking, and even I couldn't until I listened some 5 minutes, and you signed off, 'This is Garnet Ed Armstrong, speaking for my father, Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong.' Then you changed in your delivery. You copied the commercial broadcasters and became more expert in delivery, and in due time you no longer were speaking for your father, but for Garnet Ed. You did not agree with the way, in caps, in which Christ was building the college and the work through me." And this was leading to the problems that I just mentioned about girls getting pregnant and long hair in the college and all this kind of stuff that was going on in the 70s. "You even said to others that you would not have built the college the way that I did under Christ's guidance." And he was going through accreditation and so on. "In due time, I turned more of the reins of authority over to you. You began changing ways and personnel over to your way. And although you will not agree with me in this, you have not agreed in the way that things ought to be done. The work started downhill." And it did at that time. I think that at that time, they actually started charging for the plain truth. Was that the time? Or, no, they changed the plain, pardon, I think it was they changed the plain truth into a tabloid. It was a kind of newspaper thing. It was absolutely awful. And yet that was the time. It wasn't charging for it. I think it was changing it to a tabloid. "Yet I have been told you claimed that you built the work, but the living Christ built it. And he built it in the way he led me, the way that you disagreed with." So that was those are the words that Mr. Armstrong wrote to Mr. Ted Armstrong, warning him of the state of affairs. And the fact that he was off track, he was out of line, he was off track. The work needed to be get back on track, and Mr. Armstrong could see that, and he started at the top. And yet, in another co-worker letter, Mr. Armstrong says that in all these unhappy, late, irate encounters in the past 6 weeks, not once has any vestige of the Spirit of God been evident, only angry, wrathful contentions for his own personal desires. And this was a catalogue of things going right back into even the late 60s. Yesterday I sent him the official letter, heartbreaking as it was to me, disfellowshipping him from the Worldwide Church of God. That means, brethren, that on pain of being themselves disfellowshipped and put out of God's church, you are all, according to Christ's command, restrained from contact with or conversation with Garner Ted Armstrong, no longer a member of this church. I would have given my right arm rather than having to do this, but I have been too long tolerant, forgiving and covering up with love towards an ungrateful, hostile, threatening son. I have let the Church of God suffer in order to protect my son's name and knowledge and his wrongdoings. Because I have, in fact we all at or near the top of the administration of the work, have done our best to shield him and in some manner neglected the Church and all the flock in so doing. Many times behind my back my son in meetings called to those at headquarters, so top ministers told me only yesterday, made many overt or even sarcastic remarks tending to discredit his father. And again, this came out following Mr. Armstrong's heart attack. It all came to the surface. He was able to actually see this almost firsthand, and they thought, oh, he's out of it. And it was that event, the fact that he had this heart attack and very nearly died, well, he did die and was revived, that allowed him to see what was going on. My son spread the rumour that my mind had gone senile. He is guilty of what he accuses. His mind has become filled with hate and antagonism, and he has become unstable. This is not my empire, nor my son's. It's the church and the work of the living God. So Mr. Armstrong was very clear where his strength came from. He could see, right the way back into a long history prior to that, God's hand working with him, guiding this work, and revealing to him knowledge that was completely and totally unique, something that had been needed to be restored, going right back into the early time of the early apostles. I know that in December 78, we happened to be, my wife and I were staying with some friends down in Brickett Wood, and we saw an awful lot more then. I mean, before that time, in those late 70s, we were down here in Wales, and we were really out of it very, very much. We were just completely away. I mean, there was no M4. M4 hadn't come across the Welsh part yet. It was still very twisty, difficult roads all the way through the different cities and towns. And people just didn't come down here at all. But we were able to go and actually find out a great deal in staying with some friends. But in June of 79, Mr. Armstrong writes, he says, "So in last April, last year, when I felt I'd gained sufficient physical strength to take charge of the work again, I knew that the whole work, church and college, had to be turned around, put back on God's track. I knew this could not be done with Garner Ted sitting in his headquarters office, professing authority and countering everything Jesus Christ was having to do through his servant. So I asked Ted to take a clear leave of absence for at least the rest of the year, 1978, leaving Pasadena, so that I could do the job that Jesus showed me clearly he intended doing through me. But Ted contacted me three ways, by personal visit, angry threatening words, by defiant rebellious letters, and by telephone. And because of his attitude, I had my telephone number in Tucson changed, and I wanted to avoid more of the bitter, strong contention if I could. But Ted did not obey the instructions to go on leave of absence. Of course, that would have been on full salary. Finally, I told him that if he ever again went to the newspapers trying to destroy God's work by going to the world, I would have no alternative but to disfellowship him from the church once again, this time permanently. And the very next Monday morning, there was a big tirade against me in God's church and God's church from Ted in the Los Angeles Times. Thereupon, I disfellowshipped him and, according to Romans 16:17, marked him and put him permanently out of God's church." So that was the history of the actual the leadership problem. But as I say, in 78, in December, we were staying with some friends who were quite senior within the work over here. And they or the husband, was on the telephone virtually every single night. It was the Christmas period. We had time. I was able to go down. We just stayed with them. And every night they were on the telephone across to Pasadena. And what they were hearing was that there was, in fact, a court case coming up. There were certain members and ministers who were trying to actually take over the church via the world's courts. And they got in contact with Mr. Frank Brown. Mr. Frank Brown, I think it was. And he then got in contact with the legal department and Mr. Armstrong, I think. And Mr. Armstrong contacted the legal department. And the legal department said, ridiculous, they can't do anything like that. It's absolutely impossible. Don't take any notice of it. Wherever this person is getting his information from is total and utter rubbish. And then on January the 3rd, 1979, the receivers came in. And the receivership took over the church, ostensibly. Tried to, at least. And again, what they were saying was quite interesting. I have this article coming from a pastor general's report back around that time, in January 79, and just the end of January 79. The charge was that Messrs. Armstrong, Rader and others were incurring exorbitant travel gifts and entertainment expenses. That was one of the charges. Now, if you knew anything about what, in fact, Mr. Armstrong was doing at that time, he was going around visiting heads of state. And yes, he would have to spend money to do that. He had to. You don't go into a head of state with something you buy for tuppence halfpenny down in Woolworths. It just doesn't work that way. And he was, the gifts were part of protocol. And Steuben Crystal was what he used to use as the gift that he would use to, not bribe, it was just an expected protocol that, in fact, is part of going to see or visit a head of state or a king or president or whatever. Another charge is Herbert W. Armstrong is senile. His age at that particular time was 86. And, I thought, well, if he's, he's obviously very sick and all the rest of it at that time, and I was quite cynical. But, you listen to what he had to say here. And he was pushing 90 in this particular... he was in his late 80s, pushing 90 in this particular broadcast... not broadcast, in this particular sermon that we'll hear today. And he then had to battle this particular receivership that took place. And in doing so, he again saw people trying to undermine and to bring down this work that he could see was not being done by him, but was being done by Jesus Christ. Now, if you just turn over with me a little bit to 1 Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians, just a couple of scriptures just to close in what I've got to say. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, it says that, am I not an apostle? This is Paul talking to the Corinthian church. He says, am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not you my work in the Lord? If I am not an apostle to others, yet doubtless I am to you, for the seal of my apostleship are you in the Lord. The fact that they understood the things that they did proved that Paul was an apostle. Paul was somebody sent by God. And the fact that you and I understand the things that we do proves that Mr. Armstrong was an apostle, somebody sent by God. And in fact, he was more than just an apostle. He is an apostle that has been forecast and prophesied back in Malachi specifically for this end time. And his role is a very great one. It's a very high one. If we go back to the beginning of 1 Corinthians, it talks about how in verse 11, for what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of man? Chapter 2, 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 11. For what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of man that's in him? Even so the things of God knows no man but the spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit which is of God, that we may know the things that are freely given to us of God, which things also we speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teaches, but the Holy Spirit teaches, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. Now, the natural man, it says, doesn't receive these things. In other words, to receive them, you've also got to have the Spirit of God. But it's coming from people that were being led by that Spirit. And it's the Spirit of God that in fact led and directed this work. And directed the work right the way up into the 70s and also into the 80s and beyond, and until Mr. Armstrong's death. And then what we saw then was the exact same thing that happened in the 70s. We saw a liberal element take over the church. We saw more than that. We saw a complete destruction of the church. And it's our job now today to do what God had Mr. Armstrong do, and that is put the church back on the track. And for each of us individually, it's important that we do that. So we'll go ahead and... No, I don't think we'll cut the transmission. We'll just go ahead and go straight in and play the tape today, which is from 1981.